Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, Cheryl Atkinson, and KT McFarland all on the way.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. A second surveillance balloon's been spotted over Latin America.
As for the first balloon, it's believed to have made its way over Kansas and Missouri after exiting Montana. The Pentagon's been advising against shooting it down because it may pose a risk to people. But Montana Governor Greg Gianforte told Fox,
"If it was up to Montanans, this thing would have been taken out of the sky the moment it entered our sovereign airspace."
The balloon's believed to be the size of several school buses and carrying cameras and antennas. China's insisting it's a weather research airship that had blown off course. Jill Nato, Fox News.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken did not leave yesterday for a planned trip to China. He said that China's decision to do this on the eve of his visit was detrimental to the discussions they prepared to have. Bundle up if you're going out this morning. Temperatures are in the teens, but it feels like the single digits with wind chill. If you want to feel better about our frigid forecast, just look at temps in the Northeast. Wind chill is making it feel like negative 40 degrees in parts of Maine. National Weather Service meteorologist Derek Schroeder in Gray, Maine, says it doesn't take long for the human body to suffer in that kind of cold.
Once the wind chill drops below minus 30 degrees, frostbite can set in on exposed skin in as little as 10 minutes.
The cold is expected to lift by tomorrow, with temperatures in much of Maine getting above freezing by midday. Here it will be really nice tomorrow, lower 50s. A verdict comes down after a weeks-long securities fraud trial against Elon Musk.
It took a few hours for that 9-person jury to find Elon Musk. He wasn't liable in that class action lawsuit. You had numerous investors blaming him for those tweets that were not true, which they say cost them billions of dollars. Elon Musk did pay a $20 million fine to the SEC, though, for those tweets where he said that he had funding secured. He was taking Tesla private at $420. That deal never materialized.
Musk tweeting, quote, "Thank goodness the wisdom of the people has prevailed." D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser asked whether she supports the Show Up Act. It would require federal agencies to return to pre-pandemic levels of telework.
We have taken no position on that bill.
But Bowser also says,
"Our view is not that we're going to go back to 2019. Nobody thinks that."
She would like to see most federal workers back in the office most of the time, but wouldn't say what she meant by most. The House passed Congressman James Comer's bill this week.
Federal employees not being in the workplace hurt the federal government's ability to achieve its missions and deliver vital programs.
Congressman Jamie Raskin argues telework has increased efficiency. It may be the last time to do this, but the Fairfax County government's having a COVID-palooza of sorts today.
The county's saying thank you to more than 1,000 community members and groups who helped with all kinds of service through the pandemic, from hosting test sites and vaccine clinics to holding food drives and treating patients. The ceremony will be held in 3 separate sessions to accommodate everyone, featuring musical and dance performances at each event. The celebration comes days ahead of a possible vote by the Board of Supervisors to declare the county's COVID emergency over. It's been in place since March of 2020, and in that time, more than 1,700 county residents have died of COVID. John Matthews on WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports, the Wizards fell to the Trailblazers. Traffic and weather next. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In D.C. on 295, 395, and 695, check the traffic cameras out. Didn't see any crashes, and there isn't any construction being set up yet. Virginia side of the Beltway, on the inner loop and on the outer loop, if you have cruise control, go ahead and set it. There isn't anything slowing you down there. On 66 in Fairfax County, lanes are clear in both directions, eastbound and westbound. And on 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're not tapping the brakes on the northbound side or on the southbound side. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
This morning, the temperatures are in the teens. Starting the day, we'll climb to the 20s for your lunchtime and a few spots in the low 30s by the afternoon. We will have the sunshine out there, but it's going to be quite cold throughout the day. Tomorrow, high temperatures in the low 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
Right now, 17 degrees in Washington, feels like 9. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
The Saturday Morning Update continues. It's hour two. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi is with us each week, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. How are you, John?
I'm doing just peachy today, Rick. It's quite a news week.
So Friday starts off kind of normal. You get your craziness between the Dems and the Repubs on Capitol Hill. Biden's out making, you know, speeches everywhere. And then all of a sudden, this story about China just balloons out of control.
You said it. I didn't, and I'm glad about that. It turned out that a Chinese surveillance balloon has actually floated into U.S. territory. In fact, it was a stone's throw from a military base in Montana. Now, all of this is tantamount to Chinese surveillance in the United States, or perhaps a warning about things to come. In any event, the State Department thought it was significant enough to warrant the cancellation of a planned trip to Beijing and meeting with President Xi by Secretary of State Tony Blinken. In addition, some speculate that this is China's response to the insistence of newly minted House Speaker Kevin McCarthy that he is going to Taiwan. A not-so-veiled warning came from Beijing a few days ago, saying that this speaker should not follow the example of former Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Kevin McCarthy replied that China is not going to tell him what to do, and he fully intends to visit Beijing. I might add that this is a pattern of leaders around the world. The new president of the Czech Republic, for example, announced that he was in touch with Taiwan's president and that he would consider a trip in the near future. Again came the thinly guised warnings from Beijing, and again an insistence from the Czech Republic that their man can talk to who he wants. China is rattling its saber, but it's not affecting the rest of the world.
What do you make of the administration's response so far? And you have seen everything from the Cuban Missile Crisis to numbers of different crises like this where somebody's poking the bear. What do you make of where we are so far?
Well, no administration, whether it was Donald Trump's or Barack Obama's or George W. Bush or Joe Biden, is going to shoot down the surveillance balloon. The idea is that this would be too aggressive an act, and with the Chinese sacrosanct homage to saving face, something that would not work well in terms of future relations. Then again, few thought that so many world leaders, as I mentioned, would be paying homage to Taiwan. Nonetheless, this is a standard diplomatic response. Let it go, but respond in a way that doesn't involve shooting or destruction.
Fireworks in the House of Representatives on Thursday as Speaker McCarthy made good on his promise to remove Ilhan Omar from the House Foreign Relations Committee, and that set off a firestorm from the squad.
It certainly did, and we saw Congresswoman Omar and, of course, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez hitting back hard. Very simply, the Republicans wanted Congresswoman Omar of Minnesota removed from the Foreign Affairs Committee, not from any of her other committee assignments, but just simply from the committee in which she would be dealing with international relations. Why? She's made some very unkind remarks about Israel, saying at one point, it's all about the Benjamins, baby, a reference to money that Israel passes around in the United States. And, of course, she's been highly critical of the Israeli government and the American Jewish community, right within the United States. A week ago, the Republican National Committee at its winter meeting unanimously passed a resolution condemning anti-Semitism, and along with naming white nationalist Nick Fuentes, it named, you guessed it, Congresswoman Omar, as well as other members of the squad who've said unkind things about Israel. The McCarthy measure to remove her from the Foreign Affairs Committee was the natural follow-up to the RNC resolution. Now, it should be pointed out that with Republican support, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, a Republican, was removed from committees when Democrats were in charge of the House of Representatives for some unkind remarks that she made about everything from 9/11 to America's international relations, all before she was a member of Congress. She apologized for all of them. But it should also be pointed out that Congresswoman Green did take her punishment and was off all committee assignments until this month.
Seems like we just got through the midterm elections, and already we have people announcing they're not coming back in 2024's elections?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Just yesterday, Congresswoman Victoria Spartz of Indiana, a Republican, became the first U.S. representative in either party to announce retirement in 2024. And she was a very unique figure. She was born in Ukraine, grew up speaking Ukrainian and Russian, and did not learn English until she was a teenager. Came to the United States, went into business, and did very well for herself, and then was elected to the state legislature. After serving in the state legislature, she was elected to the House in 2020 and is now in her second term. And that's enough for Victoria Spartz. She announced that she wanted to go back and raise her two teenage daughters. I might add, two daughters who were fixtures in her early campaign commercials. Some find it odd that she would suddenly decide her children need her after only 4 years. Others say that Congress just isn't fun anymore, and we'll see a lot of people leaving who haven't served there that long.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. As always, John, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure and never boring here in Washington.
That's for sure. It is 7:17. It is the Saturday morning update. We'll be talking to Cheryl Atkinson next. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is on the way. K.T. McFarland on the way. It is chilly out there. And let's get the latest from the WMAL Traffic Center and Al BD.
I just finished checking out the traffic cameras on the Maryland side of the Beltway. Good news, there isn't any crashes or construction in Montgomery County and in Prince George's County. Staying in Prince George's County, between the two Beltways on the BW Parkway in 95, lanes are at speed, both northbound and southbound. Also, in Prince George's County on Route 50, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, no delays east and west. And back into Montgomery County on 270, between the Beltway and Frederick, no delays being reported on the northbound side or on the southbound side. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
7 News is on cold alert this morning. We are waking up to temperatures around the teens to low 20s, and we're only going to reach highs in the low 30s this afternoon. Sunny skies, light south winds, that'll help the wind chill out a little bit better than yesterday. And then tomorrow, we're looking at the temperatures to rebound very nicely, back above normal, into the low 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
14 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:19 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Rolling right along on the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Cheryl Atkinson is with us. She is the host of Full Measure. You can catch that every Sunday morning at 10 on ABC7. Good morning.
Good morning.
You have a very interesting story tomorrow on what can happen if the FBI kind of targets the wrong guy.
Yeah, and you know how many times it's happening as well, particularly when it comes to these Chinese-American scientists. Zhao Jingxi, who's a Chinese-American guy that found himself targeted by an FBI raid a couple of years ago, break into his house early in the morning, terrorize his daughters and his wife. He has no idea what's going on. Well, they accused him of giving sensitive information to China. They were wrong, but it took them a year to drop the charges. And by then, of course, it had destroyed the career he had and, of course, disrupted his life and cost him a ton of money. And what we were talking about on Full Measure is the fact that there's a lot of cases like this. He's not the only one. We're going to look at what could be behind these wrongful accusations.
Well, when you say wrongful, it brings up the idea of some kind of a wrongful suit. Does he have any recourse in a case like this?
Well, he does. He's suing now because he claims the FBI fabricated evidence and knew before they even made the first move on his house that he didn't do what they claimed he did. And it wouldn't be the first time for that either. I'm going to talk about this in the piece as well. Back in 1999, I broke a big story about Chinese spying on us and how a man named Wen Ho Li, another Chinese scientist, was falsely blamed by the government and was framed by the FBI, who falsified his polygraph test results and did a whole bunch of bad stuff. He ultimately got a settlement against the government. I think it was $1.5 million, which means we paid the money for the FBI's malfeasance, and none of those agents, as far as I can tell, were ever punished. And something I didn't have time really to put into the story that is interesting, I'll let your listeners know. Those FBI agents involved in the Wen Ho Li case never punished. One of them was a guy named Charles McGonigal, who was recently arrested as the former FBI head of counterintelligence in the New York office for getting involved in Russian oligarchs illegally and improperly, which I think he's denied. But my point is, when the FBI is not held accountable for something, decades go by and these people get promoted, they stay in the system, they continue to do things that are allegedly wrong, and it seems to never get taken care of.
We see that we're not exactly winning the war on drugs on the southern border with Mexico. There was another war on drugs, and we had a different partner south of the border. That one didn't work out too well either.
Well, you know, our war on drugs, I think everybody acknowledges, has been a big failure. Let's look at the fact we spent trillions of dollars over the years, but the drug problem has never been worse than it is now. Well, part of the money we spent, billions, we've given to Colombia, big partner of ours in the drug war because they're the center of all cocaine. And they now have a new leader who has also declared that their drug war is a failure. What's interesting about that is that leader, and I can't recall the name off the top of his head, but this is a Scott Duman story. He's in Colombia reporting on this. That guy announced an abrupt change in strategy, saying, hey, the drug war is not working here either. And he's going to do a lot of things that are really raising controversy, that people are debating, is this really going to help or is this really going to work? Part of me says, what we've tried hasn't worked, so if he's going to try some new tactics, even if they're controversial.
We saw the story in the past couple of weeks about the whales who were washing up on the shore in New Jersey as the windmills are being built offshore, and there's a lot of concern about the environmental impact there. That's just one, and you've got a story tomorrow on the impact of some of the green energy and what that means.
Well, this seems to be an emerging theme. When I travel around the world and talk to various experts, including green energy supporters, who are coming to the realization, in some cases they say, that the green energy transition has not been well thought out, or there have been unintended consequences that we're having to deal with that are pretty tough. Well, we're going to be interviewing one green energy expert, or an energy expert, who supports the transition to green energy, but says we're making this so fast that we're doing all kinds of things to our system that is disruptive and it's not working out, such as we've talked before, by not having systems in place to deliver and produce enough green energy to replace fossil fuels, and yet phasing out and making it so hard to continue to use fossil fuels, we're only making it where it's all more expensive for us. And in some cases, there's rationing. There are blackouts already happening, control blackouts in places that are suffering this winter when they have too much demand going on. So there's a lot to consider there.
Those stories and more tomorrow on Full Measure, 10 o'clock ABC 7, and then check it out during the day on News Channel 8. Cheryl, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It is 7:24. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, KT McFarlander, coming up, so stay with us. It is the Saturday morning update, and a quick note. You know, we heard so much about crime across the country, crime here in the Washington area. We heard about that horrible shooting at the Metro stop. One note out of Prince George's County that was a little bit a ray of bright light, and I just wanted to mention this. The assistant to the state's attorney is Adam Trombley, the Prince George's County state's attorney, is in this as well, and it's a very interesting story. And her name is Aisha Braveboy. And what it's all about is the carjacking cases that are just proliferating around this area. The Prince George's County State's Attorney announced a stiff sentence for one carjacker. The State's Attorney, Aisha Braveboy, said, "This is a very important issue that we continue to grapple with." And she handed down a 20-year sentence in a carjacking case. And she said, "It's not just an individual joyriding. In many cases, it's a very organized effort to commit these types of offenses by a network of individuals. I want the residents to know that we hear them. We, like you, share your frustration, your outrage, and we are going to do our part to send a very strong message that carjackings are unacceptable and will not be tolerated in Prince George's County. If we build a case against you, then be prepared to suffer the very severe consequences that are attached to them." So we want to just do a shout out there to the Prince George's County State's Attorney, Aisha Braveboy, for those efforts to fight carjacking, a 20-year sentence handed down in a case this week. It is 7:29. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Heather Curtis has got the 7:30 news coming up next, and then we'll have more on the Chinese balloon situation. Reports that it may be out of the U.S. airspace by the end of the day. I guess it depends on the winds and who's actually controlling the balloon. They say that it is under the control of the Chinese. Initial reports said it had been blown off course, but they do say that the Chinese are controlling that balloon, and reports that it may be out of U.S. airspace by the end of the day. We'll talk about it with Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland, so do stay with us here on the Saturday morning update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. It finally feels like winter this morning in the DMV after some spring-like temperatures earlier this week. Temperatures in the district this morning are in the teens, but it feels like the single digits with wind chill. That seems downright balmy compared to temps in the Northeast, with Mount Washington, New Hampshire being the worst. National Weather Service meteorologist Derek Schroeder in Gray, Maine says, overnight on the highest peak in the region,
the coldest wind chill reading coming in at minus 108 degrees.
The cold is expected to lift there and here tomorrow. As America keeps its eye on a massive Chinese surveillance balloon sailing over the U.S., we're learning a second balloon is flying over Latin America. The Pentagon press secretary would not say where it was spotted. The Pentagon says shooting the first one down could hurt people. China claims that one is merely a weather surveillance balloon that blew off course. D.C.'s mayor sounded the alarm about downtown office buildings being vacant thanks to telework, but she says she's taken no position on the Show Up Act. It calls for federal agencies to return to pre-pandemic levels of telework. Still, she doesn't think things will go back to the way they were in 2019.
But it is also my view that most federal workers should be in the office most of the time.
She wouldn't say what she considers most of the time. Before the House passed the bill this week, sponsor James Comer said thanks to telework federal agencies,
they're failing the American people.
Congressman Jamie Raskin argued telework's increased productivity. WMAL Sports, the Wizards fell to the Trailblazers. Traffic and weather next on WMAL. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Virginia side of the Beltway, no issues being reported on the inner loop or on the outer loop. You should be at the posted speed limit. In Fairfax County on 66, no crashes or construction on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. On 95 in Virginia, You're not going to tap your brakes. Between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, no delays, northbound or southbound. And in D.C. on 295, 395, and 695, no crashes or construction slowing you down. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
This morning, the temperatures are in the teens. Starting the day, we'll climb to the 20s for your lunchtime and a few spots in the low 30s by the afternoon. We will have the sunshine out there, but it's going to be quite cold throughout the day. Tomorrow, high temperatures in the low 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
Right now, 17 degrees in Washington. It feels like 10. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, the author of Operation Darkheart, and also the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Good to join you.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
Nope, it's a balloon. And it is the balloon heard around the world this morning. Wanted to get your just kind of initial reactions when you heard this. I mean, you've been following the national security scene for 30, 35 years plus, and your initial thoughts when you heard about the balloon. And by the way, I don't think they let the governor of Montana know about it until the thing has been sitting over Montana for a while. He was interviewed last night.
Right. My initial thoughts were, what kind of idiots do we have in charge of national security? And it's kind of like, how did you let this happen? Especially in light, Rick, of the fact that we've known about this since it actually violated the airspace of Alaska, which is a state of the union last time I checked. This is completely insane. And something this large, with that large a payload, there's no way you couldn't have seen it coming. This thing is huge. And it's not a weather balloon. It's purpose-built for exactly what we see it to be, a surveillance platform. And the fears, which I believe are legitimate, have to do with the fact that you could easily place some sort of a persistent weapon, a weapon that could be used for, you know, something over an area of your choosing to detonate, or more importantly, something that simply is able to sit somewhere and surveil. I don't think for a minute that the Chinese need this to surveil the nuclear areas because they have satellites. But in my judgment, this is meant to be exactly what it is, a test of resolve, a test of our willingness to put up with the Chinese poking us in the eye and see how we react to it. And I think that's what, you know, that's what's going on.
So you're saying a test, kind of a trial balloon, so to speak.
Literally a trial balloon with a trial balloon.
All right. You mentioned spy satellites, and What is the difference, you know, the technical difference when you've got a spy satellite, its capabilities, and then what we may know or not know of the capabilities of the surveillance equipment on the balloon? Because the Pentagon said it is surveillance, so they know that.
It is.
But just tell us in general, is this better surveillance from the balloon than from a spy satellite?
Well, it's different. So much of what foreign intelligence services want to know is a spectrum of information regarding an activity. For example, if you want to look at a nuclear facility in Montana, you'd want to kind of see what goes on regarding optics, what comes and goes. You want to have electronic intelligence, ELINT is what we call it, to kind of see the patterns of what comes off of that from antennas. You want to have signals intelligence, that is the voice information coming between people and organizations on the ground, all those things. And so, theoretically, if you have something that can sit over the top, and it's called persistent surveillance, which we've made some stabs at using similar technology, you have something that kind of sits there. It's difficult because, you know, at that altitude, winds blow it around. It's not going to stay there. I mean, obviously they say it's under control. It's not under control. It's maneuverable somewhat. Within the context of the streams of wind it has to sit in. So it's not sustainable. You can't keep it there. Satellites are very consistent. You can get the same information, say basic information, because you're talking about a very high altitude. And so a satellite with the right optics, right sensors, can pretty much give you the same information on a sustained and regular basis. So I think satellites, for most cases, are a better option than a balloon, which for the most part is not sustainable, very expensive, and only gives you a certain amount of time. This balloon will continue across the United States into areas which You know, it's like if anybody who watched the movie Ice Station Zebra, the whole premise was the camera kept taking pictures all around its path, and that's what's going to happen with the balloon here. It's going to keep going, and where it goes, it may not be of any intelligence interest at all. So that's why a satellite is way better than a balloon.
So maybe they got a closer look at the farmland they want to purchase up in Montana and North Dakota, which leads us to a story that a Chinese corn mill in North Dakota has now been deemed a, quote, significant threat by the U.S. Air Force, 370 right. acres. Tell us a little bit about why the Air Force would flag 370 acres in Grand Forks.
Same reason we just talked about. Look, you don't want folks with intelligence collection capacity, capabilities, next to facilities you're doing secret things on. It's very simple. So if you own a lot of land and you can put a lot of sensors out, you can pick up a lot of information about what the Air Force is doing, because the Air Force flies. All aircraft, no matter how stealthy they are, Rick, emit electronic signatures. Even the most stealthy aircraft emits signatures. So obviously if you own a chunk of land where you can do this passive monitoring, you can learn a whole lot about how we do things. So that's a big issue. Secondly, obviously, it's just the fact that we have an adversary buying up land at a time that we're essentially in fifth generation warfare with fentanyl, this incursion, the idea that they own our market because they're building all of our green technology, which I find totally insane, just as an aside. It's clear that they believe it, that they will dominate us no matter what it takes. And that's why this issue with the Air Force is, I think, very valid, something we should be paying attention to.
Interesting headline in the Daily Mail. Why wasn't Chinese balloon shot down before it entered U.S. airspace? Ex-Pentagon officials say defense systems should have stopped it and claim Beijing sent it as a test before the talks with Blinken, which you mentioned. But these are former Pentagon officials, it says, have been left scratching their heads by the Biden administration decision not to neutralize the Chinese spy balloon floating over the U.S. mainland. That from the Daily Mail in the U.K.
So everybody I've spoken to has the same reaction. And the one news organization which seems to have encapsulated this very issue was the Babylon Bee, and said basically that Joe Biden has promised to shoot down the balloon as soon as it finishes its intelligence collection mission, which apparently is what is going on.
Get all the intel over there, and then let's shoot it down, right?
Yeah. So because apparently that's what they're doing. And it makes absolutely zero sense. I saw that Pat Ryder, hey, Pat, if you're listening, bad move yesterday. General Ryder on his press conference, it was a train wreck. Did you see that? And his comment that, oh, you know, don't we have the right to see the balloon? Well, you can just look up and see it. That was completely insane. I have never seen a public affairs officer so badly compromise his primary mission of providing information to the public. So it's just insane. But that's how insane the whole thing is right now.
It seems like both the White House spokespeople and, you know, what you saw yesterday is they have a limited amount of information they can discuss. And while they're limited in what they can discuss, then they're trying to be transparent. They're trying to give off the appearance of being open and transparent. And then when the media asks all the right questions, which has been happening recently for a change.
Right.
They're asking all the right questions, and the spokespeople can't answer them. And, you know, maybe they need to do just like a briefing and say, hey, you know, really can't go into detail, and walk off, as opposed to taking 20 minutes of questions and answering it the same way with the same exact answer.
But don't be arrogant about it. I mean, it was very clear, Rick, that Pat knew more than what he could say. No doubt. He was nervous about that fact. But then when people ask legitimate questions, to your point, hey, why can't you guys tell us, you know, where it's at? And he says, you know, like, oh, well, just look up, you can see it yourself. That is not a response. That is a childlike, you could just go do it yourself then. That's how stupid that comment was from a brigadier general in the U.S. Air Force.
I want to say one thing. You're talking about the Pentagon spokesman, Brigadier General Pat Ryder.
Did he call in?
Well, no, not yet. But I just wanted, you know, in defense of, you know, the Pentagon spokesman, can you imagine what it must be like to be in a position where you're probably also, and I'm not saying he is, but I'm just saying, if I were in that position, I'd be scratching my head going, why did this happen? Why am I here? And why do I have to try and explain this? Because he's probably irritated at the situation he's in, and then he's irritated at being peppered by all the reporters. And, you know, you could lose your cool in a situation like that. And I'm sure it's the same thing for Corinne Jean-Pierre. You know, she's got, and I'm not sticking up for her, but I'm just saying, it's got to be really frustrating when in your, you know, in your own space or your own personal feelings are, you know, I shouldn't be here to begin with because this shouldn't be happening to begin with. And then you have to deal with the pressure of the questions and you've got global media watching you live. I mean, can you imagine the pressure that you're under? Ooh,
well, I can't imagine the pressure. I think a few of us have been there. Jesus, Rick, next thing you know, you're going to be complimenting John Kirby's ties, for goodness sake.
No, I'm not going that far. But, well, let's move on to Ukraine. What is the very latest? Of course, we've heard about the new weaponry headed to Ukraine.
Right.
Any change in direction as to how you see things going here?
So, well, I think Bill Burns, director of CIA, said it as best as can be summarized at this point. This is going to be decided in about 6 months because, Rick, everything that's going on now will determine what happens then. And I can tell you that the Russian factories are working 24/7 producing weapons, tanks, and everything else. They've got their folks online, 600,000, maybe more. And we're now just now figuring out we need to send tanks. Our tanks ain't going to show up until the spring, late spring at the soonest. The Leopards may be there from the British. The Challengers may there be there. I mean, from the Germans, the Challengers may be there from the British. But I'm just telling you, even if they get 100 and, I don't know, I think if you add the British, German, and U.S. tanks together, you may have half a brigade against literally three tank armies of the Russians. I don't see the numbers adding up here to anything except trouble for the Ukrainians. Mm. And again, I'm not pro-Russian. Simply saying, if you look at the numbers, they ain't adding up to a good picture for the Ukrainians. And I think that's where a lot of people are now recognizing that we're a little bit behind getting support to Ukraine if it's going to be used effectively to counter the upcoming Russian offensive.
And there were some comments from the CIA chief, William Burns, in general,
yep,
on the Ukraine war.
Well, Bill said, he said, this is going to be the time that has to be determined. The next 6 months have to be resolved one way or another, because he thinks that by summer everything is going to be kind of done one way or another. And I don't think Bill, if you read what he said in the media, has a lot of bright hope for Ukraine. Just, I think the administration now is trying to manage people's expectations based on the reality I think we've all been seeing for a while now.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and Thought to Action podcast. What's ballooning this weekend?
So we got another culture wars coming up. We got we're putting the band back together literally. We got Jim Mathias from the Bell Stars. We got Cherie Curry from the Runaways. Nancy Quattro. We're all going to get back together. Susan Olsen's going to join us this time from the Brady Bunch. You know, and we're going to have a hoot of a time going through all the cultural issues we face. So it's coming up very soon.
Sounds good. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, Thought to Action podcast. Find it at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you.
Thank you.
7:47, Saturday morning update on WMAL. Talk to KT McFarland next, but first, Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the BW Parkway southbound, it's jammed up in Laurel between 198 and Patuxent River Bridge. On the Beltway in Maryland, no delays in Prince George's County or in Montgomery County. Literally, you're going to go bridge to bridge and not hit your brakes. In Montgomery County on 270, between the Beltway and Frederick, all lanes are clear on the northbound side and on the southbound side. And finally, if you're going to the airports this morning, whether it's BWI, National, or Dulles, roads leading to the terminals are clear. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
7 News is on cold alert this morning. We are waking up to temperatures around the teens to low 20s, and we're only going to reach highs in the low 30s this afternoon. Sunny skies, light south winds, that'll help the wind chill out a little bit better than yesterday. And then tomorrow we're looking at temperatures to rebound very nicely back above normal into the low 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
14 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:48, Saturday morning update. 7:50, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland joins us, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People, and a board member of the American Conservative Union. KT, always an honor to have you with us.
Honor and a pleasure for me, too. Thanks, Rick.
All right, so we are seeing the story about the Chinese balloon everywhere. It is the talk of the town and basically the talk of the political world right now. And as a former deputy national security advisor who knows how this works, knows everything that's going on, how the process works, the Situation Room, the Pentagon, the president, what was your first kind of immediate reaction when you heard about this?
Somebody's got a lot of explaining to do here. You spend nearly $1 trillion on defense and intelligence. What are we getting for it? Our woke military has no idea how to capture or destroy or shoot down the balloon. We can't do it because, maybe there'll be debris. And anyway, it's not that big a deal because it's not really gathering important intelligence. Really? Isn't that your job to know how to do stuff like that? And then the intelligence services, which are so busy investigating soccer moms and political opponents of Democrats and silencing conservative speech, why didn't they see this coming? This thing was going about as fast as a jogger goes, right? And so it's going over the Pacific, it's going over Alaska, it's entering the United States. We knew this was coming a long time ago. We couldn't stop it. We didn't alert people that it was happening. It's hanging around for days. The way people learned about it was a bunch of people in the American Northwest looked up in the sky. So what are our intelligence services doing? And I guess the third question I've got is, from all indications, the Biden administration, they knew all about it, and they had to know about it, right? And they were prepared to go ahead with Blinken's trip to China until there was overwhelming public pressure on both sides of the political aisle, which has forced them to postpone. Now Biden, I think President Biden's ranting around about, we're going to shoot it down, we're going to shoot it down. But, come on, it's a little bit late, guys. You should have been having this conversation a week ago, 2 weeks ago. And I guess my conclusion and takeaway is that given the public outrage, given bipartisan support for doing something about this balloon, which, as far as I can tell, is still up there, I think this could end up really changing the political environment in the United States with regard to foreign policy, national security, and particularly China. Is this our Sputnik moment? And I would recall for all your very young listeners that in 1957, the United States was top of the world. We had won World War II almost single-handedly. Our economy, our technology was vastly superior to every other country in the world. We were thriving, peace in our time, we had harnessed atomic power, and then suddenly, out of nowhere, the Soviet Union launches a Sputnik satellite. They were the first country to launch a satellite into space. It was the communists, not the United States, which launched the space age. And the reaction, it sent shockwaves around the world, but especially in the U.S., and it changed our political environment overnight. All of a sudden, war hero and Democrat hawk John F. Kennedy was elected to the White House in 1960. There was a massive shift in U.S. government spending towards technology to regain the technology lead, to satellite technology, military buildup. And John F. Kennedy said, the Russians may have been first in space, but we're going to put a man on the moon in a decade. And we did all that. And what we did in the late 1950s, early 1960s, in response to the Russian satellite, really changed the course of American and world history, because all of a sudden we recognized the Soviet Union was a threat, the Cold War, that we took seriously the things that the Soviet Union was doing. And so maybe there's an echo of that today, where for so long, everybody's looked the other way about China. I mean, I've been screaming about it for 15 years alone. And now maybe the whole country is waking up to say, wait a minute, China really is a major adversary. And if they're going to violate our airspace and then, you know, pretend, ooh, oops, you know, it was really just a weather satellite looking for global warming that got blown off course. Come on. I think nobody's believing that, and it's an insult for them to say that to our face, thinking that we're going to believe it.
So as a deputy national security advisor, you know the process, and without divulging classified information here, walk us through kind of who the players are, what happens in a case like this. I mean, you have the Situation Room, you've got people at the Pentagon, you've got the administration, you've got, you know, politicians in general involved in all of this. Walk us kind of through the process of what happens in a case like this.
Well, let's assume that our intelligence services actually saw it, right, that they had the capability of seeing it, that it wasn't just a bunch of people in Montana looking up in the sky. There should have been an intelligence community would have immediately notified the White House, the National Security Council, to say we've got a problem here. They would have convened immediately a White House Situation Room meeting of probably the deputies of all the departments to say, okay, what's the situation? What are our options? What do we tell the president? I mean, this would have happened within hours, probably less than an hour. And even while the intelligence was being gathered, they would have had the first alert that the White House would have had the first alert that there was a problem. So then it calls into question, obviously, the people in the White House staff are planning for the Secretary of State's staff are planning for the Secretary of State's visit to Beijing. Much looked forward to. This is an administration which really believes that the more meetings you have, the more progress you're making, even if there's no progress. They believe in the process more than the result. And so for them to have called off this meeting, you know, somebody should have been saying right away, well, is it really a good idea for the United States Secretary of State to give the honor to the Chinese to go to China to have this trip? And then there would have been analysis coming from the China guys saying, look, China does this. This is how they provoke. And then it would have probably, in a good White House, would have called into, they would have had a, you know, an immediately have set up a, like a hot room, you know, a section of the White House office and the National Security Council to kind of coalesce all the information. You know, what's going, militarily, what's going on, technologically, what's going on, intelligence-wise, what's going on, what's going on in China, why are they doing this? What are the possibilities? Could we shoot it down? Could we capture it? Could we throw a butterfly net over it? Should the Secretary of State, when then we would also be consulting with our allies, and now it turns out that there are balloons all over the place, Latin America, Canada, maybe Mexico. So it would have been an immediate, within a day, conversation with our close allies to say, what the heck are you guys saying? Maybe all this stuff is happening, but it sure sounds like the White House is not taking the lead in any of this, that they're being responsive, defensive and responsive and reactionary. They're not seizing the initiative. I mean, the trip is only canceled because of the overwhelming public criticism. And they still haven't figured out what to do with the thing. I mean, at a minimum, try to literally throw a butterfly net over it. It's going about as fast as a jogger. Could you not capture it and find out what intelligence it we can get from their intelligence gathering capabilities? And then I think we should have a far bigger response to China than just merely canceling, you know, yet another meeting. I think we need to look really seriously at our across-the-board relationship with China. Isn't it time to get really serious about bringing this critical supply chain home to the United States to reshore a lot of our important industries? Isn't it really time to focus on high technology and develop things like hypersonic weapons and defenses? We have none of that stuff. The Chinese have it. The Russians have it. I do think that it's an opportunity for a real reassessment of American national security interests.
K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. As always, K.T., thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you.
You bet. I'm still scratching my head as to why some hacker hasn't taken control of the balloon and landed it somewhere for us. But I guess the hackers are busy stealing people's money at this point. That's a wrap for the Saturday morning update. Thank you very much for being with us this morning. And we will see you for Garden Sense this afternoon at 1.
WMALFM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMALFM.